Welcome to this week's Knotty Topics show. Today we are talking about the subject of common law. We are very grateful to have Brian Benji with us. Brian is an incredibly talented musician and is passionate about common law. He will be explaining and breaking down this complex topic. Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here.
Yeah, I'm excited to get talking about it.
So, Brian, how did your discovery of common law start?
Basically, what happened was I was actually going through a period of depression, and this was back in early 2010, and I was sitting in the city centre, you know, just kind of sitting down, head down, and a guy came up to me with a card saying Tír na Saoire on the top of it, which means land of the free. And it said on the back of it, did you know that you never had to register your house? Did you know you never had to register your birth? Did you know the government of Ireland is a registered corporation trading for profit? And all these bullet points, every one of these bullet points, I just said, no, I didn't know that. In my head, I was like, no, I did not know that. So I was quite curious about these claims on the back of the card. So I went home and I looked at the website that had all this information. And as I read through the information about government, I had no idea about the government being a corporation ever. I just assumed the government was for the people, is what we all learn. It's there to ensure the happiness and prosperity of a people. That's what my assumption was. But when I looked into it, I realized, okay, this looks like real information. I found it quite unbelievable, really, to be honest, because this particular website, it was called dunandbradstreet.com. You could actually go onto this website and find credit reports for all these corporations around the world, which were governments. And I didn't believe what I was reading. I was like, I cannot believe this. I thought these people, the judges, police officers, all these people that are in this are here to help us, are here to look after us. But it seemed that it was a lot more sinister than that. So
what does that mean, that they're a corporation? How does that affect us?
Well, the kind of corporation they are, they actually are a registered corporation. So the one in Ireland is the Government of Ireland Limited, same as UK Limited. They're all limited trading companies. And the type of companies they are representative companies. So they represent people. That's their business. Now, they trick people into gaining representation over them at a very young age. They create this thing that we all know is a birth certificate. And that is like a contract, like any other contract. If you work at McDonald's, you write out a contract and you sign it and agree to abide by the rules and policies of McDonald's if they agree that you get the job. The same with the government, except it's much bigger, obviously. So they ask you, do you want a birth certificate? And your mother and father will sign that birth certificate, not understanding that it's actually handing over ownership, in a sense, to that child and representation. So when that's handed over, they assume representation. So they also assume that you will abide by all their rules and policies. And the government's rules and policies are called what we know today as legislation, which is basically made up of acts and statutes.
So can I just ask then, is common law the same across the UK, or is there a difference between Scotland, England and Wales from Ireland?
Common law is like the most basic universal law there is. And it boils down to one simple thing. Do not injure or harm any woman's or man's body or property. Yeah, it's quite a simple law to understand. Just keep the peace, you know. Jesus Christ talked about it as well. Do unto others as you expect it to be done unto yourself. It's quite a simple law, you know. The universal law.
So if our birth certificate
is part of these, a contract to say that we're part of these statutes and the policies, then this all happened without our say-so. We didn't give that permission because obviously we were too young to do that.
Exactly. And that's what makes, see, in order for a contract to be lawful, it has to be a two-sided agreement, which in some sense it does seem that way. But because you were far too young to understand that contract, it already binds it unlawful under the law, under the common law. And every single government, even the EU state itself, the European Union, that constitution recognizes that there's a higher law above all state laws that cannot be contravened by any state or government body. And that is common law.
So can I ask then, Brian, because I know that you've had some experiences with this. Can you tell us and the listeners some of your experiences where you've put this into practice?
Yeah, sure. Do you want me to give you the first time I tried it? Well, after I received the information, obviously, and because I didn't believe it, the very first thing, now I had no idea what I was doing at this time. I was just kind of reading a lot of the jargon off a website and remembering it in my head and saying, right, I'm going to try this. So basically what I did one day, I decided to speed past a police car as fast as I can and get pulled over and try all this stuff. So this was the very first time trying it because I just couldn't believe it. So I had to just see what it was all about. So what the website had told me to do was, in a sense, was saying you should never engage in any way. You should only open your window a small bit and don't just give in to immediate questions like licenses and stuff like that. Don't just hand over any information. Make sure you ask the police officer his information first and all this kind of stuff. So what happened was when the policeman pulled me over, I rolled down my window a small bit and he basically said, give me your license and registration. And I said, who are you? And he said, what do you mean? I said, who are you? And he says, I'm a police officer. He says, are you here on your oath of office? And he was like, who told you to say this? You know, and I was shaking at this time as well. I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, I know my rights. Are you here on your oath of office? And he says, he kept repeating, you know, who told you to say this? Get out of the vehicle, he starts saying. Now, at this point, I locked the doors on the vehicle and I said, I'm now recording this for my own defense because you're now threatening me and telling me to get out of my vehicle when I don't have to get out of my vehicle. I've asked you to introduce yourself and tell me if you're on your oath of office. And he then said, if you don't get out of the vehicle, I'm going to get more police to come here and we'll remove you from the vehicle forcefully. And I says, well, I'm now in fear of my life. And I'm telling you that I'm in fear of my life and I'm not moving from this vehicle because you're now threatening me and being abusive. And at that point, he then said, right, well, I'm going to make a call now. And he walked away from my vehicle towards his vehicle. I rolled down my window and I said, I'm sorry, guard. In Ireland, they're called Garda. So I said, I'm sorry, guard. You're now wasting my time. I've asked you if you're here on your oath of office and you haven't answered any of my questions. You've just threatened me and abused me. I'm not taking any more time here. I'm driving away. Thank you. I rolled up my window and I drove off and he never followed me. Now, that's when this was the initial awakening of it all, because the fact that he never followed me made me realize, okay, there is something to this information. I was holding onto the steering wheel, shaking at the same time, going, whoa, what the hell just happened? Because I assumed he would just chase after me and pull me in again and arrest me or something, you know, but he didn't even follow me. And I was like, wow, this is something to be looked at even further, you know. So then I actually already had some cases initially in the court from traffic offenses and stuff like that. So I decided to use it in the courts. And this was the first time I actually was put into prison for about 3 days. And I recited a line from the website Tír na Saoire. And I went in and I decided I was going to say this to the judge. Now, you might not fully understand what I'm about to say, but again, it's just jargon from the website. So it's based on the whole legal entity and the fact that the legal entity is not me. So when I went into the courtroom, I waited for them to call the name Mr. Benji. And when the judge called that name, I simply stood up and I said, I am Brian of the Benji family, who is the lawful administrator of Mr. Brian Benji, and I will happily accept all charges if the court of the prosecution can prove they have the right to make such claim. And with that, the judge said to me then, please move forward. And I said, no, I knew because of the, it's like a game of chess. If I agree to what he says after me making a claim, I'm giving him authority. So when he said, please move forward, if I had said yes and moved forward, he would have had authority over me in the court. So I said, no, thank you. I'm happy to stand here. And he says, well, if you don't move forward, you'll be held in contempt of court. And I said, am I being denied my God-given rights? And he says, no, you're not. I says, it feels like I am because I've told you I'd like to stand here. And I'm simply asking the courts to prove the claim. And he then held me. He didn't like it. It was just, it came out of nowhere and there was lots of people in the courtroom. So the judge got very, very frustrated with me and he held me in contempt of court. Now, normally what happens is when somebody is held in contempt of court, they're held in the courtroom outside until the end of the day and they're allowed to come back in to like make amends for their contempt of court. But because of the way I approached this, this judge was so furious with me that he didn't allow me to come in at the end of the day. He sent me to the Midlands prison. And basically, I then had to initiate proceedings against the High Court saying that I was being unlawfully held, which I was. So I had to do a sworn affidavit, which is basically, you know, a piece of apparatus that you give to the court to bring the case forward. And I had to do a sworn affidavit, get it stamped by a peace commissioner or a commissioner of oaths, being the same as in Scotland or the UK. And then I brought it to the High Court and sued the state for unlawful imprisonment. That was basically the first kind of bit of success. Even though I spent 3 days in prison, I did successfully sue them for unlawful imprisonment because I wasn't actually in contempt of court at all.
Brian, you talk about this legal identity. Is this connected with the straw man? Could you explain a bit about that, please?
Yeah, the straw man is the legal entity, basically. You know, there's different words for it. It's like legal entity, state created fiction, straw man, corporate entity, you know. And what they do is basically when you're born, they create a separate you, a separate corporation of you, another vessel. And the business, the reason why they created this in the first place is because governments used to have like gold and silver and all different commodities to borrow money from banking institutions and banking families. But over time, all that kind of faded away and disappeared. You know, we don't know where it's all gone now these days. But back in, it was somewhere in the middle of the 1800s where they created this Registration of Birth Act. And the purpose of this was to actually, because governments had to give something as collateral, they no longer had gold and silver to back up the currency and stuff like that. So they then started to give our birth certs, assuming that we'll generate income as we grow older, which we do because they teach us how to seek profit. They send us to the government schools and they teach us how to keep it going. So our birth certificates are used as collateral to borrow more money into the corporation to keep it afloat. And that's what they use our legal entities for.
So are we being used in that way then?
Yes, yeah. But in the sense, when it all comes to light, we are being used, but when it comes to light, you'll realize we're actually granting that permission in a sense. When we fully realize the game, we understand that we have the power to actually step away from it because the person has nothing to do with us whatsoever. And if you have a passport there in front of you, if anyone is listening and they have a passport, they can look at their passport right now, and it will say on the back of it, this passport does not belong to the person who holds it. It belongs to the Minister of Foreign Affairs. So you have a person, you are not a person. The person that you have, you're simply the lawful administrator of it, but it still don't belong to you. It still belongs to the state. That's why it will say on the crown. Yeah.
So I was going to ask you actually about passports and driving licenses. How does that affect our passports and our driving, or how does this affect our driving licenses and passports?
Well, that's the same thing that I don't, when I sent, so when I say I govern my own life, I'm not subject to any legislative acts or statutes. So that means I have the freedom to travel without licenses, without taxes, without permissions, without any insurances or anything like that. I have the freedom to travel. Now, the thing is, driving is also a legalese word. It's the word driving actually involves a transaction of money. In legalese, if you're driving, it has to involve a transaction of money. So that's why if the police say, I'm driving my vehicle, I say, no, I'm not driving. I'm not doing any transaction. I'm traveling. I'm simply traveling. And I have the freedom to travel. I don't engage in any of their own words, you know. I just simply say, no, I have the freedom to travel. And that's an inalienable right that we all have, you know.
So as a complete beginner myself in all of this, what does legalese mean?
Legalese is simply a language. Same as Chinese, you know, English, Irish, you know, Burmese. Legalese is an actual language. So every government document that you ever receive is written in legalese. Even the people that are writing them don't have a full idea of what legalese is, you know. So the judges will know, most of the judges in the country, in whatever country it may be, will know exactly what legalese is and what words mean what. The police know a very, very small amount. Solicitors and barristers and stuff like that, they'll know a little bit more. And as you move up the ranks, they'll know a lot more of it. So I can give you some of the basic words that we should know in terms of what the legalese words are synonymous with in comparison to English words. So the word person that we assume is just a regular person, flesh and blood man or whatever, is actually synonymous with corporate entity. And the word understand is synonymous with stand under. And then another good one to know in legalese is must. The word must is synonymous with may. So when we see things like you must pay, what they're really saying is you may pay.
Interesting. Really, really interesting to know the different connotations of the words.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the real meaning.
And the real meaning, yeah. Also, you talked about the word statute. So what if statute has the Queen's stamp? Because a passport has the Queen's stamp.
Does it then make it? I want to say the word legal, yeah, but I'm really careful about how I use this now and what it means.
Okay, so like when I say legislation is made up of statutes and acts, right? Most people would say that's a law, and in some way it does seem that way. But an act and a statute, they're only given the force of law under mutual consent of the governed people. Whereas my argument is that I am not governed by anyone; I am a sovereign. So therefore, I am not bound to acts and statutes. I'll only appear in a court or any of these places if I harm another man or woman. So the likes of licenses and taxes and insurance and stuff like that, most of these cases, nobody has ever been harmed. The only thing that's being harmed is the state, which is the corporation. It's losing out in its pocket. You know?
So can you explain a bit about when you say I'm a sovereign?
Yeah.
What that means, and also how you became a sovereign in your own right?
Yeah, a sovereign is somebody that knows that they have the inalienable rights as any, the same as anyone else in the world, that we're all equal. You know, every single constitution in the world will say that all men and women are created equal, but we don't fully adopt that in our hearts. We go, oh, that person is more important, or the president is more, and then there's no such thing. You know, like I remember when I learned this stuff, I went to visit the president's house just to see, I wanted to see what this place was all about. And we went into a certain room, and the person that was showing us around, they said, this is where the president comes to meet all the important people. And I said to him, what do you mean by important people? Are we not all equal? And she just kind of went, oh no, we are. I don't mean it that way, you know. And I said, well, there is no such thing as important people. We're all important, you know. We don't fully adopt what these pieces of paper say, and these constitutions, they list the rights that we're already born with. You know, we don't need them to know this. They just simply listen.
So when you say that you are a sovereign, you are free, mm-hmm. Did you do something to create that for yourself?
Okay, so I'll give you another example of when this actually lit a fire up inside of me. I became quite frustrated by what a policeman said to me one time. And he was right. The reason why I got so frustrated is because he was actually dead so true in what he was saying. And this was early on in the stages of challenging the courts and stuff like that. And one of the days I went in and I was challenging the judge and stuff like that. And it didn't go perfectly well. It didn't go exactly how I liked it, but I was released. And when the policeman was giving me back all my stuff from being in the cells, like my belt and all this, my belongings, he said, oh, you're not able to accept state law, but you're able to accept state benefit. So I was claiming state benefit at the same time on behalf of the legal entity, Mr. Brian, right? And with that, it created a lot of anger inside me because it was true. I was accepting the benefit that the state gives and then I took it upon myself to detach from all of that, and I stopped claiming it. I start, you know, I was busking on the streets and I just completely start doing my own thing. I actually set up a grow as well for myself so I could earn my own money while I was doing the busking and stuff like that. I just start doing my own thing and earning my own money basically. And stepping away from it, because that's what it's about. It's about, if I'm saying I'm sovereign, I can't be reliant on that thing that I'm stepping away from. So there's a guy that I actually listened to from America, Mr. T, his name is. And
Mr. T.
Yeah, Mr. T. He's another common law guy from America. He does a lot of talks online and stuff like that. But he brought to life for me the fact, like, he stopped using vehicles himself. He stopped driving completely because he just said it's not worth the hassle, you know. It's like, because all these vehicles that we use, they're registered as well, you know, they've got a registration. And register comes from the Latin register, which means king owns. And when you register these vehicles and stuff like that, you're actually giving ownership to the state. So therefore, if the vehicle is registered, it's bound to the rules and policies of the road. Whereas, so you have to go through a process of deregistering the car, which is something I've never done before, you know. So these are things that we have to kind of decide for ourselves what we want, you know. I still drive, by the way, but I don't have licenses or the tax or insurance. And I decide upon myself that if I do get pulled and something does happen, I'll use what I know to step away from it, you know. And now I haven't been in trouble with them in a long time in that way. So I'm happy for that, you know.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, I was just thinking about because I know a lot of people listening to this podcast will be really, really interested in this. But it's actually, like, what are the first small steps that we can all take to start to get this momentum really moving forward?
So the firstly, we have to, like, I can say this to anybody and they can go, yeah, I understand that. I understand it. But what I'll always say to everyone is, in order for it to start working for you and for everyone else, it must no longer be a belief. It has to be a knowing. There's a big difference between belief and knowing. When it becomes knowing, you simply just stand up against it because you know in your heart this is not right. When it's a belief, it's kind of like a chase. You know, it's like, oh, I believe it. I don't know. You know, it's kind of one foot in, one foot out. So it has to become knowing in us. We have to be strong in knowing that, yeah, we truly are all equal. These people don't have authority over me. You know, when we adopt it that way, that's the good beginning. And then learning how to speak to the policemen without being angry with them, because this is things that I went through. I was angry in the courtrooms. I was angry with the policeman. And all these times I was angry, it never worked out. It was always like me against them. But until I found love for the conditioning that's being put on everyone, that's when things changed. Because I started to see the judge, the policemen, as just lost human beings in the courtroom. I remember the first time I just kind of envisioned the judge in front of me as a little baby, you know, like just lost baby. And I became more loving toward him and loving towards the people around me. And that's when it started to really work, you know. So it's being nice to the people that are stuck in this world. That's number one. And also holding your own ground as well. So I can give some basic examples of how to approach the policemen when they approach you as well, if you want me to do that. You know?
That would be great. And I just love how you say it. It's not about being confrontational. It's not about being dangerous or any of those things. It's actually about really owning what's important and standing up for ourselves.
Like, I remember many times when this all came to light, I would really try my best to tell the policeman I'm speaking to, look, I really love you. I care for you. I care for all the people that are around you. And this is the reason why I speak the way I speak. It's not to challenge you. I really believe we all have to come together. Nobody is exempt from this. Not you, not your superiors. We're all in the same boat and we need to come together, you know. I'm not creating an argument because I think I'm right. It's not about that at all. It's about us coming together now with something that's super, super important at the moment. So when we're speaking to policemen, the number one thing you should ask a policeman when he approaches you, before, it's the very first question he asks you, no matter what it is, you don't give him an answer. You always respond with a question. Simply say, he says, who are you? You say, who are you? Identify yourself. And when he identifies himself, say, okay, nice to meet you. You know, are you here acting on your oath of office? Is the number one question. Are you acting on your oath of office? The thing is, the policeman has to say yes to that. He has to say, yeah, I'm here on my oath of office. There is one time when I was playing in the streets in Dublin, and a policeman, I asked him that question. And he said, what do you mean by that? And I says, well, are you here acting on your oath of office as a peace officer, keeping the peace? Or are you here as a policy enforcer, enforcing policy for the state? And he goes, well, both. And I said, well, I can't recognize you as a policy enforcer. I'm not going to consent to any of your policy. And he was, you know, he kind of was a little bit taken back by that. And I said, look, I recognize you as a peace officer. I haven't breached the peace. I'm here playing music. I haven't harmed anyone. If you want to arrest me based on me not agreeing to your policy, by all means, arrest me. But if you really think about it, you bring a musician into a courtroom over playing music on the streets, the judge is going to give out to you for wasting his time. And he just left it be then.
So when you describe, are you acting on your oath of office?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So every police officer is sworn in under the Queen or the President of Ireland, and they're sworn to uphold the common law of the land, to protect the people, not the state. So when they're acting as a policy enforcer, they're acting in the interest of the state, which is the corporation. But when they're acting under oath of office, they're acting in in conjunction with the freedom of the people and the protecting you. So they're acting to serve you. So that's the position you need to get them in, is that they're acting as a peace officer. Now, most of them will say yes to that. And when they say yes to that, you just simply say, brilliant, am I in breach of the peace? And the only way you can be in breach of the peace is if you physically harmed another human being.
Gosh, it feels like we are just scratching the surface of this really, really essential information, actually, because it's just vital, as you say, for all of us to
have a standing
around this. It's just incredible.
And like I said, I'm not any expert in this. This is just me sharing my own personal experiences and hoping that people come together in this and realize that we can defeat this together, you know. And it does require numbers, you know, if we're going to be taking on cases in court and stuff like this, and the likes of people that want to live self-sufficiently and buying their own land, like all these permissions that they try and involve to get for building homes and all, they're all unlawful permissions, you know. We all have the right to build our own homes. And you see a lot of people getting removed from their homes and stuff like that because they simply don't have the numbers to stand up against it, you know, and that's what we need. We need a community to really stand up against this in peace, not in hate or argument or anything like that, just in peace and you know, logical thinking and, you know, really sharing it and using it for our benefit.
How can we find out more about this, Brian?
So one of the documentaries that Michaela shared the other day was Ungrip, which I was actually looking for this documentary for weeks, and I couldn't remember the name of the guy that was involved in it. And this documentary, I find, is one of the best documentaries online in terms of success and how this guy engaged with the people and used the information to benefit himself for living off the land and not being registered and everything like that. It's a really good documentary for anyone to start and watch. Another website, there's also freedomrebels.co.uk. There's freedomireland.ning.com, which is ning.com. And tirnasaor.com. Tirnasaor is T-I-R-N-A-S-A-O-R, tirnasaor.com. And basically, if you just Google common law, you know, you will find a ton of information on it there. Unfortunately, in the last 10 years, I have seen massive, massive censorship on this subject. Like, the videos that I used to be able to find are no longer there. They're no longer available. They're shutting it down more and more because they don't want people to really get a hold of this information, you know, because it kind of breaks the whole thing. For me, there's many different areas within the system that need to be looked at. But for me, this is the number one that has a grip on people, because everyone believes that legislation is law, and all the phony legislation that gets passed day by day that slowly just takes people's freedoms away is just handing away our freedoms more and more every day. And because people believe it to be law, that's why the grip is just getting stronger and stronger in some way.
Brian, it's been just so interesting to talk to you today. And I just want to ask, if people want to find out more about this as well, can they contact you? Are you happy for people to do that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Let me think. I suppose the best thing to get me is on Instagram, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. So what we'll do at the end of the podcast and when we publish the podcast is we'll put a link to your Instagram and then people can click on it. I think that's probably the best.
Slowly detaching from the social media sites. I deleted my Facebook and all that. So I'm trying to find decentralized social media and stuff like that. Slowly be changing over. But for now, Instagram is good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's just such a fascinating subject.
It was my pleasure, and I hope to speak to you again soon about more stuff.
Absolutely. Well, we're hoping you're going to come back for another podcast to talk about your music.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely. That's the fun stories.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, guys. Lots of love.
Lots of love to you.